The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Welcome back. Second half of the program live. And you always hear in the vernacular of sports, pressure shots. One thing to try to win your team a championship, but just wait till you hear this next story. Chris Kerr joins the show again. And Chris, of course, played golf at the University of Georgia. He has won a number of times on the PGA Tour. But a couple of years ago, he ran into some issues with abuse, substance abuse, excuse me, and alcoholism. And he took a break from the tour. He came back, and to keep his card, he needed to finish strong Sunday. And that's exactly what he did. He birdied the final hole in Hawaii, and his card remains active. And Chris, I can't thank you enough. And first of all, congratulations for getting through all the things that you have encountered since I believe we have spoken to you last. Good afternoon.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on the show.
Let's start with Sunday. Everyone that appreciates you and pulls for you knew what you were dealing with. First of all, I explained to the audience the card issue, because you were on tour on, you had won, I think, on the Corn Ferry earlier or last year. I can't remember which one. So what were you facing even coming into this tournament?
Yeah, so when I took my leave of absence I guess that was 2019, when I came back, I had, I believe, 11 PGA Tour events left to kind of add that to my previous point total to finish in the top 125 and remain fully exempt. And I had not played incredible, had a few good weeks here and there, but yeah, this past week the Sony Open was my last one, and so I knew I needed a two-way tie for third at worst to maintain my full playing privileges. Other than that, I would have been playing on past champion status, you know, trying to get some sponsor exemptions here and there, Monday qualifiers, that type of thing, which, you know, it was probably not quite as much of a do or die situation as people are selling it to be, but was definitely huge to be able to get that finish when I needed it and now be back fully exempt on the PGA Tour.
So you have a great tournament. You come to the 18th hole, and do you know what you, I guess you do know what you need at that point, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. It was kind of a situation where I knew that if I was going to have a chance to win the golf tournament, you know, I obviously had to get the ball up and down. And so I was able to kind of focus more on that. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, it was obviously going to benefit me a ton either way to make that birdie and get the ball up and down. So I was able to keep a relatively clear mind and just go through my process and do it. But, it was incredible. It was a difficult pitch shot I had from right of the green, and to see that ball come off just how I wanted it to and end up there close where I just had a little tap in was a huge relief. That wouldn't have been a very fun 5-footer if I'd had that.
and I want to go back in a minute, but you wouldn't have been completely desolate had you not won the card, but explain to the audience, for those who don't understand the nuances of the top 25, what does that do for your state of mind, knowing that you play where you want, you do what you want, and you hit the reset button, so to speak?
Yeah, it's a huge difference. Yeah, there are a lot of different levels of status out on the PGA Tour, from, you know, all the way up from major winners and guys that are in the top 50 in the world rankings, down to, you know, fully exempt PGA Tour players in the top 125, and then you have conditional players. Sorry. Conditional players that are coming off the Corn Ferry Tour, and then the 126 to 150 category. All the way down to past champion category and beyond. So, you know, say if I'm in the past champion category, which is where I would have been had I not played so well last week, that's going to get in, you know, maybe 6 to 8 events a year. And then other than that, I would have been, you know, asking for some sponsor exemptions from tournaments that I'd played a lot in the past, and you know, maybe some Monday qualifiers, maybe some events on the Korn Ferry Tour. It would have been just kind of a mixed bag of, you know, playing whenever I got the chance to, which you can certainly make work. But now, you know, it's very fortunate. I'm very thankful that I get to go back to kind of where I've been for the last 10 years of picking and choosing my schedule and going to places where I like to go and have tended to play well in the past.
Chris, I know you've addressed it very, very candidly and publicly, but if you go back almost 2 years ago, how did you realize that you had a drinking problem?
It finally got beat into my head, to be honest with you, after a lot of attempted times of sobriety and failures. You know, I think it was November 2018 was the first time when I really kind of admitted to myself and some family members and close friends. I just kind of told some people, like, hey, you know, I think I'm drinking too much. You know, I'm just going to stop for a while and you know, see where this takes me. And from November 2018 until my sobriety day, which is April 29th, 2019, I would have periods of, you know, 3 to 4 weeks of misery, basically, and then a relapse where, you know, I would go kind of off the handle for a day or two, and then remorse and trying to get it back together, and then, you know, it was just kind of a cycle of that 3 or 4 times. And then, you know, the last time I did that, it was kind of I was at the end of my rope, so to say, and you know, it obviously put a lot of strain on my personal relationships with my family, and you know, things were just not in a good place, and it was kind of finally to that point where I was like, okay, I am really trying to not do this. I just can't not do it. And so at that point, that was when I was like, okay, if I'm going to have any chance of keeping my life together at all, you know, I need to step away from my career. I need, you know, and you know, I'm very lucky that I was in a place where I could do that, and really just spent 7 months or so of not, I didn't play golf at all for about 3.5 months, I think, and 4 months, and really just focused in on what I needed to do to get myself better, with some counseling, some, you know, support group stuff, working with other people that have been in my same situation is really what was the thing that sparked a real change in my mentality. But just diving headfirst into that, and saying, you know, I don't know what will come of my golf career. You know, at the point there, I was not really interested in playing much at all, but was able to just kind of put that on the back burner and focus on what I needed to do to be a healthy person again, mentally and physically.
Chris, we all have issues with various things, and, you know, some more serious than others. And for those many people watching right now or listening, what would you tell them in terms of trying to recognize the problem, which is the first step, and then overcome it, which is difficult?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly did not set out to try to be a poster boy for this or a role model or any of that type of thing. But now, you know, being somewhat on the other side of it, this is a journey that will never be over for me, and something that I'll work on for the rest of my life. But just seeing, you know, I guess that it's okay to reach out for help and to be vulnerable. I think that was what I had the hardest time with, starting off, you know, being a professional athlete, you kind of always have this mentality of I've got this, I can handle this, I can do this myself. And that was, you know, when I first tried to stop, that was exactly how I went into it and failed miserably. So that was a big eye-opening thing for me that, you know, it's, you don't have to always be in control of everything. You don't have to always act like you're okay. And you know, so I hope that people can maybe relate to that a little bit, and sort of see that, you know, if there's something that they're struggling with, having a hard time with, then, you know, there's a lot of other people out there that are in the same situation as you. And a lot of people that are out there that are really willing and eager to help.
Finally, the reaction as this became public and you meet people wherever you are or go, were you surprised that as large a number of people have dealt with this as you did? Because I think sometimes we don't realize other people are going through what we're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an incredible community, really. People that have been in the same situation that I've been in and that I am now, and people that are really trying to make change and do things the right way, and also makes you realize that, you know, whether it's alcoholism or depression or anxiety or whatever, I mean, the overwhelming majority of people in this world are having a hard time with something, and, you know, and there's, but it doesn't make you weird or different. You know, that's okay. And so I think that the people that do the best job of recovering and getting over these things and getting into a better place are the people that are, it seems like in my experience, the people that are the most open and candid about it and just kind of let it, you know, let it be a part of them, and that's okay, you know, and do what they can. Do what they can to move on and get better.
Chris Kirk, an amazing story. We're so glad that you are doing well and are in good shape on the tour, and all the best. Thanks for sharing your story, and we hope to talk to you again very soon.
I appreciate it very much. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much, Chris. What a story. What an amazing and inspirational story he shared with us. We'll take a break. We will come back with more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Much more to go right here on a Wednesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, welcome back. We are talking next to Jordan, who is in Knoxville. Hey, Jordan, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you. I was wanting to ask, has Tom Herman officially been named as a coach for Tennessee, or who do you think it may be?
I don't think it will be Tom Herman. There are a lot of reasons for that, but I would take him off your list. I don't know right now. It really depends on whether they think short term, which is Kevin Steele as an interim, or they, after bringing in a new athletic director here soon, they decide to broaden the net.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Rick is up next. And Rick, you are on the air. How are you?
Oh, hello. It's nice to talk to you, Paul. I was wondering if I was ever going to get through. I've listened to your show for years. But
thank you very much.
I just had a little, I had a little something to share with you about Nick Saban. You know, he's in the news. You know, and everybody's giving him a hard time about he's cheating. It ain't fair. But I worked for a company that transferred me all over the country back in the 90s, and I've got to meet some of his players and some of his supporters, and he is one of the most hardworking, focused men I've ever had the privilege to be around him. Whatever he has, he has worked for it.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I'm really glad you said that, Rick. Nobody's ever given the guy anything. He's earned it.
I know it seems like everybody thinks it. I mean, he has worked. Well, let me tell you one more little thing. I'm from Georgia, and when I transferred back home was about when he came to LSU. And we had a big party there with the folks I worked with. They were going to send him a send-off. And me and the guys from Michigan State were the saddest people in that room because they hated to lose him, and I hated to see him come.
Nice. I'm glad you got in. Thank you very much. Tom is up next in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Tom.
I am up next. Hey, Paul, how you doing today?
We are doing well. Thank you.
All right. Long-time admirer, first-time caller.
Thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to ask you about your comments the other day regarding this being potentially an inside job. I recall in the middle of the season that Coach Pruitt let one of his line coaches go. I'm surprised that journalists aren't following up with that.
Yeah, that was Jimmy Brumbaugh. And it was pretty ugly based on what we heard. And you're right. I don't know that Jimmy Brumbaugh was involved in this, but I will tell you, and you already know this because you asked the question, in any type of investigation, you always look at those who have been wronged the most. It doesn't matter whether it's an NCAA investigation, a civil case, a federal criminal case, that's usually where you go. And I don't, and you know, whether it's him or some person that works in compliance that Jeremy Pruitt treated badly, which evidence would show that might be a number of people, it's a good place to start. I would agree with you.
Okay, well, thanks for taking the call.
Thank you, Tom. Nice of you to call.
Have a great day.
You bet. Chip is up next in Chattanooga. Hey, Chip.
Hey, how are you doing, sir?
We are doing well.
I have a two-part question. First one is there any chance that Tennessee should try to do what Alabama does? Seems like every year they add a new ex-NFL head coach, and they get them back on the right program. I have a couple names of mine, like Alex Van Pelt, Tampa Bay's offensive coordinator. I believe it's
Chip, let me jump in. Those are all good coaches. I wouldn't argue with you at all, but I'm pretty sure based on what the Tennessee leadership has said that they are going to hire someone with experience. So I think you would probably consider those. And the enemy, by all accounts, has as many credentials as anybody in the NFL. I don't know why he has not gotten a head coaching job, as many others have wondered. But I don't think this is going to be an on-the-job training here for Tennessee. They've already done that. They just got through doing that, and it turned out to be an abject disaster. Stacy is up next. Hey, Stacy, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Feinbaum. And again, it's a pleasure and an honor to talk to you, sir.
Thank you.
I've learned something from you every day, and I thank you.
Thank you very much.
A couple of quick comments and then a question, if you don't mind. To Mr. Kirk, I am not a golf person, but, sir, making a mistake, there's nothing wrong with that. you learn from your mistakes, admit your mistakes, and go on and grow. And it's obvious that he has done that. I really did appreciate his comment.
Yeah, I will tell you, Stacey, I'm glad you mentioned that. And I think especially now when so many people are experiencing a difficult time in their life because of the circumstances that exist everywhere, that's an important story to listen to, because a lot of times we don't really know what's going on and why we are not acting as normal as everyone else. But I've seen it firsthand. Fortunately, I haven't gone down that road, but I know plenty of people who have in my family and friends, and it is a very difficult odyssey, and I'm so glad he shared that story.
Yes, sir. Everybody has pain, and we all need to have more compassion. To the young lady that was the basketball prodigy of Miss Pat, Coach Pat Summit.
Yeah, Candace Parker.
Yes, sir. I hope that Jeremy Pruitt is listening to this and listen to her to see what an influence a coach can be on a young mind. You lead with dignity, strength, and pride, not arrogance and hot-headedness. Maybe he, too, will learn from his mistakes.
I hope he will, because I say this in praise of Jeremy Pruitt. He's a very good evaluator of talent. He was an extremely good assistant coach. But I think sometimes Saban disciples forget the valuable lesson that they should learn and ultimately will learn. They are not Nick Saban. And they can't bark commands like Nick Saban. Nick Saban has a method to his madness, like Pat Summitt did, like other great people. Jeremy Pruitt is not at that level. Just because you make a lot of money and have a fancy title, that doesn't entitle you to treat people like I hear he treated people. Anyway, water under the bridge. Let's take a short break here. More of your phone calls. We will talk about Kentucky's basketball woes in the final hour. They are dangerously close to doomsday in relation to the NCAA basketball tournament. Another big game tonight. And we will come back with more of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Chris is up next in California. Hey, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
I'm a first-time caller, and I'd just like to speak to an issue I have with the college football playoff expansion. As a former player many, many years ago, injuries and schedules, I feel, have a lot to do with the injury, what I call the injury factor, the gladiatorial factor with teams and particularly football teams as they progress through their seasons. And what I'm thinking of is if we go to an expansion process with the college football playoffs, which I'm in favor of, how are we going to accommodate this gladiatorial factor? And by that, what I mean is number of games played affecting injuries and hurting players as they progress through their seasons. I believe the NFL Players Association has conducted studies on this, and they factor, I believe, a maximum of 16 games before the injuries of a given team become unacceptable. But I'm not sure about that. But anyway, if for example, we were going to expand the college football playoffs to, say, accommodate two teams for every major conference. That would be the Pac-12, Big Ten, ACC, SEC, Big 12. that would be 10 teams accommodated, plus possibly the championship of the BCS series. That would be 11 teams to accommodate through bracketry and expand the number of games required to get to the championship significantly. I'm just wondering, how would they accommodate that expansion of games?
Yeah, Chris, I think the only way to get an expanded playoff is to perhaps eliminate the conference championship game, which would be one game less, or maybe eliminate one of these insignificant games that we get either early in the year or later. But I think you're right. There's only so many games 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds can play.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your call. That was interesting. I appreciate it. Catherine is up next. Hey, Catherine.
Hi, Paul. I was just wondering, can we start over this year or go to 2022? Because it sure is a rocky start.
Yeah, no, I agree. Everyone couldn't wait to say goodbye to 20, but the first week or two of 21 was pretty rocky.
I'm just laughing because I'm wondering if the Volunteers fans wouldn't like to have Butch Jones back. They crucified that poor guy and couldn't wait to, you know, see him gone. And now I think he had a lot of integrity as opposed to what we're seeing this week with the
That would not be a tall hill to climb.
Yeah. Listen, the reason I was calling is I noticed so many injuries both in the college, this year, and then now the NFL that I'm watching the playoffs. And It just seemed to getting brutal, and like the quarterback from Kansas City Chiefs, you know, they don't know whether he'll be playing this week or not. But and when Kyle Pitts got hit during the Georgia game, I mean, that was really hard to watch, and it just seems like they're getting more fierce or something. And
well, Catherine, I'm not a sports medicine expert, but I do think the speed of the athletes plays a role in that. They're coming at you so fast. And with such velocity, and if you go back, it's always been a violent game. I think the protection is better today than it's ever been, and it's necessary, especially with concussions. But the players are in such better condition in terms of agility and speed that I think when you look at a defensive player coming at a tight end or a quarterback at the rate that they are doing it now versus maybe 30 years ago, it is significant. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Sky is up next. Hey, Sky, welcome. Good afternoon.
Hey, what's up, Paul? Appreciate you having me on. Long-time listener, long-time caller.
Well, thank you.
I hope you're doing well, my friend.
We're doing great, Sky. Absolutely.
Awesome. Paul, look, you've been covering intercollegiate athletics for a long, long time. In all your years of covering NCAA sports, can you ever remember when a university leader like Tennessee Chancellor Dondi Plowman self-sabotaging her own school and throwing them under the bus quite like she did on Monday?
No, I mean, I've heard it. At faculty senate meetings, when you have academicians letting off steam about the conflict, but between academia and athletics, but I don't believe I've heard a chancellor convict her program before. And I thought Gentry Estes made a really important distinction. She didn't say the allegations. I mean, she pretty much said we're guilty.
Yeah, she basically buried her own school. I mean, if Tennessee wanted to fire Jeremy Pruitt, then they would have saved themselves a whole lot of money and certainly shame had they just paid the man his $12 million buyout and allowed the NCAA to do their job rather than trying to do it for them.
Well, first of all, Sky, they didn't have to pay the $12 million. They could have gone to his agent and said, listen, we're going to let you out of here as fast as we can. But they didn't, and I understand there is an emotional reaction, overreaction, when you find out about stuff like this. But that's why you hire lawyers to tell you what you should and shouldn't say. And yeah, you could see Philip Fulmer over there just cringing because he's been down that road before. He's been a head coach. He's been an athletic director. He knows the vernacular that you display in a moment like that.
No doubt. I'm going to leave you with this. There was a prestigious school. It's been a while back, but their reputation was tarnished to the max, far worse than Tennessee's is. And there was a head coach that was able to lead them through that. And I'm speaking of Penn State
right.
and O'Brien,
right.
what he did at Penn State. I think that's the kind of guy that may be able to get Tennessee through this mess.
Yeah,
I appreciate it, Paul.
Hey, thank you. I agree with you. You talk about a school that, you know, that covered it up for forever, and then the moment it was exposed, decided just to destroy their own program. And Bill O'Brien did one of the greatest coaching jobs ever in restoring order to Penn State. I don't know whether he is on the list or not, and until they get an athletic director, it is going to be difficult to really know. Mike is up next in Jacksonville. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Paul, question for you. So everybody says that Hugh Freeze is basically banned from calling into or from being hired in the SEC. Why is that? Who is stopping? Are they going to put Tennessee on probation if they hire Hugh Freeze? I don't understand it. Nick Saban tried the same thing, and he was supposedly told that he couldn't hire Hugh Freeze a couple of years ago. What's stopping them?
Well, it's a good question, Mike, and I, what's stopping them is a resistance to bringing him on because of his past. And I don't think there is any hardened rule that says you can't hire Hugh Freeze. Now, the reason why there was resistance when he was when Saban wanted him was it had more to do with the fact that at the time Ole Miss was still suffering from a postseason ban, and the feeling was it wasn't fair or equitable to let him coach while his team that he helped to put on probation was unable to participate. But yeah, I think Tennessee could hire him. I think it would be extremely difficult for that same chancellor who buried Jeremy Pruitt on Monday to sit next to Hugh Freeze and extol his virtues.
So basically, the school, not the SEC.
I have asked the commissioner before, and he has been very clear that the SEC advises and counsels universities when they ask. But he made it very clear that we do not dictate what you can and can't do when it comes to a coach, as long as the NCAA has given that coach a green light.
Yeah, the situation they're in, though, I don't understand how they could hire anyone better.
I don't think you could get a better football coach than Hugh Freeze. I don't. I think he's a
not at this point for them.
No, he is a phenomenal football coach, but when I tell you what, if Tennessee hires him, they've got some big time chutzpah. I'll tell you that. We'll take a break. More to come on this program.
Thank you, Paul.
You bet. We're taking a break. We'll talk a little bit about basketball in the SEC in the final hour. We've had quite an extraordinary day with Candace Parker on and Chris Kirk. Some moving, poignant interviews. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back here on a late Wednesday afternoon, early evening, and TS is up next in Louisiana. Hello, TS. Good day to you.
Hey, Paul. Great to talk to you. Had a couple of questions. I called a couple of weeks ago and I tried to start the thing was taking up a lot of the calls, and I said, well, I'll ask later, but I have two questions. One, you know, they were beating up on Nick in Alabama about winning all these national championships. And I started thinking, I said, well, what about, especially the West Coast, and I said, well, what about John Wooden at UCLA? Didn't he win like 10 out of 12 years he won the,
yes,
the championship? That's my first question. Well, where was the West Coast then about him winning all the games? It's kind of unfair. And then my second question is, do you know if Nick Saban, and I looked at the window of coaching time, did Nick Saban and Bear Bryant, to your knowledge, ever sit down and talk, have a conversation?
I don't believe so. I know I've heard Nick Saban refer to Coach Bryant, maybe having heard him speak before. But you have to remember, Nick Saban's 69 years old. Coach Bryant, I'm trying to do the math on the age. Coach Bryant died at 69, 38 years ago. Yeah, next week. So
yeah,
I
looked at the window and
I wouldn't
and
think
they
so.
They were coaching, I think. Nick had graduated, I think, started graduating.
Yeah, he was in coaching, but I just don't think I don't think that happened. Man, that would be a great conversation, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, really. What about the what do you think about the non-attention to John Wooden and at UCLA winning all those national championships?
Yeah, and by the way, it's funny, we're going to speak to Bill Walton later in the week about the subject of Wooden versus Saban. The NCAA tournament was much different back then. It was not nearly as big as it was as it is today. And what was interesting about Wooden, there were years where he only had to win two games to get to the Final Four, and he never had to leave the West Coast because you didn't have the pod system or the seeding system. If you won the Pac-12, you played in Arizona, or you played in California, or somewhere out there, or Washington State. You didn't have to travel anywhere, so you basically beat up the teams that you were already better than. It was I don't know whether UCLA would have, they probably would have won no matter what the circumstances were, but he still was a great coach. I've had the opportunity to talk to him a few times before he passed away, and. He is not getting an inflated ranking in terms of greatness.
And I think all three were great coaches, given
absolutely
who they are, what they did, what they accomplished. So, I just wanted to throw that.
No, I'm glad you did. I want to make sure people. I don't know. We've had Bill Walton on the program, but not for a long time. So, but he will be here Friday. And I cannot wait. He's entertaining and legendary all at the same time. Let's check in with Jason, who is in Georgia. Hey, Jason, you are on the air.
Hey, Paul. First-time caller. Watch you all the time.
Thank you.
Seeing some things about Muschamp to Georgia. Have you heard anything?
I've heard he is there. There had been a little confusion over exactly what he will do, but I'm pretty sure he will do something there, yes.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much. And I think it's under. There's been some. There was a report out earlier today that he had been hired, and then there was some blowback. But he is on the Georgia campus as we speak. Chad is in Virginia. Hey, Chad, go right ahead.
Hello, Paul.
Hey there. Good afternoon.
Hey, how are you?
We're doing great.
Good. Great. Great. Hey, T.S. from Louisiana there, he kind of stole a little bit of my thunder, but I wanted to touch on a little bit of this, the Alabama football thing. I've been an Alabama fan all my life, and I'm having a hard time grasping this train of thought that we should somehow punish or do something to keep Alabama from being successful.
Allow me to jump in, and I apologize, but we're late on time. Nobody other than a writer or two has suggested this. So I think we all should chill out a little bit on this being some mandate from the hierarchy of the SEC or the NCAA. It's a writer in USA Today and in The Athletic, and I would pay no attention to either one of them, even though both have been guests on the program. Another hour to go. We hope you'll stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.